and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shay Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome to New Retirement Radio on WTCM News Talk 580. We do have an appropriate professional in, of course, Mr. Dennis Prout of Prout Financial Design. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning, Ron Jolly. Good morning to our listening audience. On January 7, 2021,
First show of the year.
It is indeed, and on my own.
Imagine last year at this time. Would you have any idea of how 2020 would play out?
No. Yeah, obviously not. And who could have foretold a pandemic, a market that declined by 35% or so from recollection, and an all-time high in the market realized at the end of the year, and government largesse put into the economy at numbers heretofore unknown.
The Dow, unthought of. As of this moment, 10 after 10 on Thursday, the 7th of January, as of this moment, the Dow is at over 31,000.
I wondered. I said earlier this morning to myself, boy, we're knocking on the door of 31 grand
and
on the Dow.
S&P close to 38.
Wow. Yeah, it's amazing. And why? Why, you ask? What
why?
Is going on? So first off, we want to give many thank yous to many entities over the holidays. First of all, WTCM and Steve Cook, who helped produce the Gift of the Magi show.
Very nice.
Thank you, Steve. His personal involvement in that was really appreciated. And he actually placed the songs in the order that they were. And I thought he did a great job, and a real surprise to us. TCM broomed all the ads, got rid of all the ads for the show. I was not counting on that at all. And what a nice gift from WTCM, and I'm assuming Chris in management on that. Thank you. Thank you very much. It added to it, and we've had a lot of nice comments, so thank you for those who've done that as well. And then secondly was the interview with Shay, interviewing Paul Michalak, I don't know if you'd call him the chief engineer, but one of the significant engineers, we'll just say that, in the development and ongoing development of the Corvette program.
Ah, yes.
And he said the next, I talked to him a few days ago, by the way, what an honor to know him, and what a great job he did in sharing his story, and Shay interviewing him as well. Just so fascinating. But this mid-engine Corvette is the one that he is, I think it's fair to say, most excited about and what it's doing and what it's done. But he said the next one will be the first Corvette, next Vette in line. I think it'll be the C8, if memory serves, will be the first one that he has not had any hand in. So that will be, it just shows you how long term and ongoing that's been, because I think he's been retired for 7-8 years now anyway.
The American iconic automobile, the Corvette.
You bet.
Yeah.
What a vehicle. So we're going to try to continue those kinds of interviews in the future to help you prepare, possibly assist with your own retirement, hear stories, success stories of others in their own journey before and through retirement. And that's what we want, right? We want to be inspired. I do. And to possibly achieve something that I hadn't thought of before. And before I forget, Jack Lane had mentioned a week or two ago his goal setting ideals inspired by Zig Ziglar. And we have done shows in the past regarding Zig Ziglar's information, and we hope to do that in the future as well.
I like those are great messages when you can bring those in.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
just
you,
a positive, forward, optimistic, challenging, and you help people be all they can be.
Let's do it. Absolutely. So Zig has obviously got an incredible reputation that was maintained throughout his lifetime, and we'll try to add to it our own experience and use his information as shared. Today, the economy, it's not all bad. It is not all bad. I would refer to this, and others are, as a cost-push inflation economy. We'll share the stats as to why and possibly where to consider allocating. Now, we also always have to couch what we're saying on the radio because, you know, I don't know who's listening, and compliance people are overseeing us as well. So I'm sure some of you said, well, you know, I listened to another budget guy, and he's all about telling me exactly how much I'm going to earn and what it's going to do and all this sort of thing. That's because he's not in the industry. And frankly, I'll just say it. He doesn't have a clue. He's a budget guy. So, you know, he obviously is well-informed. I'm not going to use his name. And he's got a lot of good information, but these markets obviously have their ups and their downs. So we're going to use information culled from various sources, including two of the three largest mutual fund companies in the United States, American Funds and Vanguard. The largest one by dollars under management currently is Fidelity, but they are all in the $900 billion range in terms of retail assets under management, all in the 900 range. So they are very tightly packed there, those top three. And obviously have some great research as well. These people, if you look at them, you can see their track records. You can see what the expenses of those funds are. You can understand and know that generally they're spending a lot of time doing research. And they have relationships and connections that you and I would never even consider. That's just a few of the points we're talking about in regards to these mutual funds and why they could possibly be beneficial to you. But first, we want to talk about what was in the $900 billion package just passed by Congress. So just to review quickly, we're going to talk briefly about the economic stimulus package, what it means for small business, and then we're going to go on to the economy and the stats there. For some of the minor pieces that came on for 2021, 100% deduction now for business meals in 2021.
There is?
Yes. That last year it was 50% in 2020.
Is that in the new bill you just said?
It is in the new bill.
Is that
surprise?
Help restaurants, do you think? Or?
That's the intent, you bet. Okay. So they're going to try to encourage us to go out and eat more.
The old three martini lunch, you and me, Dennis.
There you go. This is the most expensive lunch I've ever had. Officer, I had no idea. No, never mind. Okay, so, and then the second round of PPP loans, the protection loan package is now in force. And what that means with this new stimulus package is if you have any quarter where you had revenue, gross receipts declined by 25% or more, you can indeed apply for the second round of the stimulus, 25% or more. So that'll be, first of all, important that you know what your quarterly numbers are as a small business. And that would be for any quarter in 2020 where your receipts or revenues declined by 25% or more. Okay?
So April, May, June probably would have been the worst quarter.
Yes.
But you're saying if the third or fourth quarter
was... If there was any quarter that declined by 25%
from the one before,
you can apply for the stimulus.
Got it.
And lastly, and probably most importantly, the PPP loans that any company received in 2020 will now be, the Congress and the IRS went back and forth on whether or not that would be forgivable as an expense or not. Congress came back after the IRS had said, no, you can't deduct this as an allowable expense. Congress came back and said, indeed, you can. So that money, in essence, will be tax-free to those businesses that have qualified under the PPP program, which will save them in the range, I'll just use a wide range here, 20 to 40% in tax on the amounts that they received through their loans. Now, that'll be important to review with your accountants. Obviously, 2020 had a lot of changes going on. It was just mind-boggling. We were to the end in our own practice helping clients convert IRA monies to Roth. And that, I think, will be another big issue coming here in 2021, depending on what the tax packages changes and their changes, what those look like. But we think it'll be on pretty significantly. So the that is the big, those are the biggies in terms of economic stimulus from the package, from a business standpoint. Obviously, there are a lot of other points on there to make note of. For anyone who took advantage of the Economic Injury Disaster Loan, or the EIDL, you can actually go back and get up to $10,000 for those who were limited in that compensation or help from the federal government. It was $1,000 per employee, and now they've gone back and said, well, you can apply up to the full $10,000 if you had fewer than 10 employees year.
So all of that just passed that huge bill, but part of the bill, which is $900 billion you mentioned.
Yes.
Business owners should check what their accountants probably are up on this.
Yes. Yeah. The accountants should be up on it, and to make certain that this will have a positive change for most in their tax obligations starting this year, and any payments you need to make through the 15th of January, given your taxable income for the year.
By the way, I hear through a little bird named Shay that you're going to have a virtual event with Mr. Ed Slott, focusing a lot on some of the new taxes.
We are.
Aha. Uh-huh.
We just got that set up, and we are excited. Shay had quite a conversation with Lauren there at Ed Slott's office, and we have that arranged. Is she going to announce that, or do you have the dates there, Ron?
I don't have the date yet, sometime in March, but between you and Shay and everybody at Prout, when that's all firmed up with a date and that, you'll let them know. But it's a virtual event, so all the details forthcoming. But it's definite it will be in March.
It will be in
March.
Mr. Ed Slott, and they've done virtual events now, a fair number of them, and had a lot of participation, so that was exciting to hear. So we'll be making further announcements, and whether Shay may call in with that as well.
All right.
We'll see what happens there. So next part, 10 largest stocks by market capitalization and their potential for the coming year. It's interesting that the five largest companies by market capitalization in the United States, what would you guess, Ron, is number one? What company?
Amazon?
Close. Apple.
Apple. Okay. Oh.
Amazon, number three. Apple's one, Microsoft two, Amazon three, Google number four, Facebook five, Tesla
six. Had to be up there. Yeah.
Notice that five of the top 10 U.S. stocks are tech stocks, and seven out of the top 10 global stocks are technology stocks as well. Global biggest. Such a concentration of companies in one sector in the top 10 is enough to give one pause, but there is more. Goes on to use some more descriptive language there, but only two to three of the stocks ranked by global market cap remain in the 10 list, and that list 10 years later statistically. So most of them, it just points up to the risk in owning those companies moving forward because of their outsized performance in the last few years and their placement in the top 10. Only 20 to 30% of those that are in the top 10 now will remain so after in the next 10 years.
Really?
Seven or eight companies that drop off that list over the following decade all underperform the newcomers to the list 10 years later. So trying to make investment decisions based on yesterday's information, there you go. Growth doesn't nearly have the same potential as you might think. Because what does Vanguard say, and we've referenced this before, their view on where the return projections will be for the next 10 years, Number one, most boring equity type you can think of, U.S. value. Conservative value companies are at the top of the list because they had the worst performance in the last few years. So rotating or understanding or trying to gaze into the future is very important. So some of the stocks or sectors that you view as being especially boring may well make sense to allocate toward. And having an allocation strategy that is diversified in its approach is extremely important, because often we're looking in the rearview mirror, aren't we, in terms of performance. Yeah. I mean, we all go together in that. The better performing sector yet than U.S. value is global equities, according to Vanguard.
What are global equities?
Global equities, international stocks, Mercedes-Benz, those kind of companies, you know, big ones. So that generally large cap stocks that trade internationally tend to be better, look to be better performers in the next 10 years. So having an allocation too that would point toward having international equities in your portfolio is extremely important. That is an ongoing conversation we have with clients. So this inflationary cost push economy that we're going to be talking about in more depth here after the break, we'll talk about what that can mean in terms of allocation moving forward as well. So the four quadrants framework, regarding the upcoming economy, inflationary boom, what types of assets generally do you want to own? Stores of value, real estate, gold, commodities, cyclical producers, and stay out of long-term bonds. That's what we're saying. That's what we believe is going to happen. Obviously, we don't know this for sure. We have to always say that, of course. But a cyclical inflation model has turned up, pointing to an emerging upcycle in CPI inflation in the months ahead. Generally, it's going to depend on how much stimulus the Fed continues to put into the economy, as well as whether or not that'll be the case.
What was the four quadrants? You said commodities, gold, real estate, and stores of value.
Those are the types of investments that tend to perform well in that inflationary boom quadrant.
Stores of value would be like what?
I mean, stores of value, real estate, gold, commodities.
Oh, those, okay.
Those are examples of stores of value assets, rather.
Got it.
Stores of value assets. Now, the four quadrants totally are inflationary boom. That's the right top one. The left top one is inflationary bust. Bottom left, is disinflationary bust. And the bottom right, disinflationary boom. So the inflationary boom, there could be worse things. What does that mean in terms of interest rates? Most likely going up. In terms of a 10-year note, treasury note, they're estimating that it may go up as much as 2% this coming year. That would mean much higher interest rates for mortgages. So money, the cost of money, is certainly most likely going to go up in the coming year. What does that mean for U.S. stocks? You want to be more conservative, but also remain a player if you can, given your own risk tolerance in those areas. It's important. So, the U.S. growth indicator has turned positive as well. That number crashed in 19 and early 20, given the COVID situation, and has now recuperated or recovered here quite dramatically, or if you can see that black line there in our economic
I'm looking
growth
at the
indicator.
Graph there, yes.
So that is as well important. Incorporating mostly economic data, showing that uptick. The indicator here, here's the description regarding that indicator, which I just showed you, Ron. The indicator collapsed at the end of 19 and the early part of 2020, but has now returned to positive territory. And we'll take this phone call in just a moment. Yep. This suggests that the U.S. recovery will continue, which is supported by his control tool, as we're referring here in the information. A diffusing index of economically sensitive prices, which incorporates only market prices. A U.S. recession is highly unlikely in the near future, which may be hard to believe in some respects because of the government spending that's going on. But that's actually part of the driver forward with this economy.
You still have a lot of unemployment out there from a lot of jobs and a lot less economic activity like in the big cities and elsewhere.
Those areas will necessarily take longer to recover, the microeconomy, if you will, restaurants and all the rest. Do we have a phone call here?
We do. Let's go to Wolverine, Michigan. Ralph is on the line. Good morning, Ralph.
Good morning. I was just calling regarding the PPP program.
Sure.
The SBA has to issue guidance on that, and it did just release that last night. There's one larger document, 80-some pages, outlining forgiveness and changes to the first PPP loans, but then there's 42 pages which clarify the details and specifics of the new program. And if somebody just searches PPP SBA guidance, they'll be able to find it out there.
Boy, I appreciate that phone call. So that just came out last night in further detail and guidance by the SBA on the PPP program. And that is, what is the site for that, if you would, Ralph?
I found it on the Journal of Accountancy, but I just found that by searching SBA PPP guidance.
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Ms. Google, SBA PPP guidance.
You bet.
All right. Thanks, Ralph, for the buzz there in Wolverine. As we go to Traverse City, Charlie's on the line with Dennis Prout in the studio. Good morning, Charlie.
And a pleasant good morning, all.
Yes.
Good morning.
Dennis, I'm curious as to, you know, when this whole thing started and we watched a precipitous drop in the oil and gas industry. I've been tracking this and looking at pipeline investments, pipeline stocks, and have been watching them start to bounce as far as issues with inflation going forward, any of the, you know, the economy being in shift again, it seeming to come back up to a certain degree. How do you feel about pipeline stocks?
Well, honestly, I don't know a lot about pipeline stocks in particular, but I can share my view in regards to energy specifically. And energy, the energy sector, most likely is on a turn up. Well, it already is. It's showing that it's on a turn up, and we most likely will see stronger prices in the energy sector in the coming year as well for crude and all the rest. So that, well, could be positive for pipeline stocks. Okay.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your input.
You're welcome.
Charlie, thanks for the buzz today. You are listening to New Retirement Radio on WTCM with Prout Financial Design. That is Mr. Dennis Prout today.
Awesome. Thank you. So the next part of this is the velocity of money is turning up. That's a rate at which money changes hands. This is another good indicator that things appear to be moving forward and or improving. The velocity of money and the reaction to the central bank, U.S. entering an inflationary phase, the amount of money injected into the U.S. economy in the last 12 months has been stupendous. Stupendous. Never heretofore seen. As a result, V, or velocity, has collapsed as never before. People just weren't spending money.
Yeah.
You know, we understood that. But the velocity indicator versus economic philosophy, according to this Gavakal indicator, this gentleman from France who manages about $2 billion in assets is someone who our own economist, Rob, references significantly, is showing this indicator literally crashing. And this goes all the way back to about 1994, 95. You can see that huge drop there, Ron.
And that was last year, 2020.
That was at the end of, that was in 2020, yes, yeah. So the beginning of 2020, March, April or so. But it has since picked up some. So it appears that the velocity of money is starting to move forward. The economic velocity improving could be another good indicator of growth. And that money is moving. The cash balances held by economic agents are starting to move into the real economy, is what that's saying. That tends to be a positive indicator as well.
So you've mentioned the seemingly record amounts of money injected into the economy, not created through work production, printed up digitally by the Fed, and put into the economy. some people might say, well, that's great. Why don't we just do that more often? You know, what's there to worry about? So what would you say to that?
Well, at some point, the economy has to have the ability and the government to tax that economy to pay it back. So that travels on trust. If that trust begins to erode or there becomes a question as to the government's ability to pay that back, then necessarily the price of that debt will increase dramatically, or whether the value of that debt will decline dramatically, and the interest rates will rise dramatically for that same debt, causing a further decline in the price of that asset, which you don't want to see by any government. So their ability to continue to tax and spend together have to be in concert. And, of course, as we know, the federal government isn't always a good rulemaker on their own for their own spending habits. So they can spend to a certain extent to their ability to continue to collect and make good on that debt. But when that becomes in doubt, that's where the problem occurs. So you have to anticipate that. What's that going to mean? And most likely, again, we'll see if the velocity of money is rising to go along with that. Demand for money must be growing faster than the supply. That's a part of it. This implies that the price of money, the interest rate, will rise. Yeah. What could upset this logic, would be the Fed continuing to print money, and too much, perhaps. We'll see what happens with that. It has to be a balance, which I don't think any of us believe there's any sort of balance going on at this point in time. But if they do ramp back and or they get pushback from those who are more conservative in the House or the Senate, we'll see. Hopefully that prevails. So the conclusions, generally, economic activity is going to be strong to very strong in the near future. Inflation is going to accelerate significantly in the next 12 months. Yields on 10-year treasuries, as we mentioned, up, according to this, about 200 basis points, or about 2%. That would be a significant increase. That would mean that actually, most likely, I'll say this, money market funds would actually have a yield again. Can you imagine that? Actually getting a yield on your savings account?
Well, do you really get zero now on money markets?
Yeah, it's basically zero. I have clients tell me they're getting 0.001 or whatever it is on their interest rates, and it's just so pathetic.
Yeah.
So we might actually see interest rates again. We'll see. If the Fed tries to stop rates from rising, the U.S. dollar may decline, which would be inflationary for the U.S. and deflationary for Europe. So that's the conclusion here of our own economist and some others that we respect. We'll look at the further outlook here. As said here by American Funds, moving over to them and what they're saying regarding their capital ideas and market insights, the shape of the economic recovery depends on vaccines, which probably goes without saying, but we'll see how the states do in administering these. You've heard this, and it's been on the news. There's quite a bit of infighting about how the administration is working and going on those, kind of ugly in the details, I think. But hopefully that'll continue to improve in terms of the training that's needed and being able to get people vaccinated to a significant enough degree to satisfy all the supply that apparently is sitting on the shelves at this point, or in their fridges,
if
you will.
In the freezer, deep freeze.
Yeah. It's interesting to take a look back. The headline of this is, "The future is here and it's digital." Consider that at the start of World War II, an estimated 75% of U.S. artillery was horse-drawn.
At the end of World War II...
At the start of World War II...
75% of artillery...
U.S. artillery was horse-drawn. By the end of the war, America didn't enter the atomic age.
Wow.
So a dramatic shift, eh?
And we made all those bombers downstate at the Willow Run plant and tanks.
Basically.
Wow. But they were pulling our artillery with horses.
To the winner goes the ability to supply the arms and all the other stuff that's got to make a war happen, eh? Think about how dramatic those years were. What if online learning, as it exists today, is the horse-drawn equivalent? What might the nuclear equivalent of an online classroom look like? As Shea was mentioning the class being online, I was thinking, oh my gosh, you know, that could be incredible. We'll have screens that totally encompass the whole side of a room.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be 15 feet wide, and we can look, just stand up and talk to each other through the screen, eh?
Well, you know how they have virtual reality now, I think they're using for entertainment. You put on the big goggles, and then you're in a whole different virtual world, 3D it looks like. Imagine you might actually do that with a classroom and feel like you're seeing 3D people.
Actually, there, almost.
That could be the future.
Almost like Memorex there, Ron.
Almost like Memorex.
Yes.
Yeah, that's wild to think about this stuff.
Yes, it is. So although consumer habits and whole industries may forever be altered by the pandemic, overall activity, economic activity has been staging a remarkable comeback. After experiencing its worst recession since the Great Depression, the worst one since the Great Depression, the U.S. generated, United States generated a record 33% annualized GDP growth in the third quarter of 2020. 33%.
Huge.
Can the American economy continue its strong rebound in 2021? It would appear that the rebound will indeed be pretty strong. We'll see. But for those who are concerned, I would simply point to the stock market's response here to the stimulus and to what looks like the end of the presidential election here yesterday. That's as far as I'm going to I'm going to step into the politics of the day. But it would appear as though we now have an official president.
And I looked at Yahoo Finance, where the markets are up, and a little banner says 787,000 Americans filed new jobless claims for the week ending January 2nd. New jobless claims unexpectedly steadied below 800,000. So I guess it's a high number, but it's a good number, I guess.
Yes, relatively.
Relatively.
So the mechanics of this, a slower rollout of vaccines could result in uneven growth for a few quarters, whereas quicker distribution could drive GDP growth above, or gross domestic product growth, above 3% in 2021, which would mean another really good growth number for the U.S. economy. And having some assets that have that growth potential as well. So getting out of those possibly stocks that may have too much risk, rotating to those that do, preparing for this kind of inflation push economy, and thinking about your own personal needs as it regards, in regards to that too. Well, do I need to be more conservative with part of my assets because I'm going to be drawing income? That was a conversation we had yesterday with a couple. Yeah, in their particular case, the answer is yes, because it's only a year or two before they're going to start drawing income from it. So each of these pieces are important, if possible, to have in the portfolio, and remembering what your own needs and wants are regarding that portfolio and what it needs to do back for you. Because all of a sudden, instead of pushing that forward, perhaps you're going to be needing to draw income. So that's kind of the yin and the yang of it. By the way, do we have the Shea stats?
I was just going to suggest we
Let's get our
Shea stats, which Shea was kind enough to record for us. So we shall listen to some interesting statistics.
Hey, welcome back. This is Shea Pataja with some Shea stats. You might be encouraged by a few of these, so listen up. For the year, the S&P 500 gained 18.4% total return during 2020, the 13th year in the last 25 years that the 33.4 trillion index has returned at least 15% total return for the calendar year. And for you Debbie Downers out there, here's one for the long term. The long term, the S&P 500 has gained an average of 10.9% per year total return over the last 50 years. So that's from 1971 to 2020. The index has been positive in 16 of the last 18 years. Over the long term, the S&P 500 has been up during 40 of the last 50 years, or 80% of the time. And lastly, let's talk about the NASDAQ. The NASDAQ composite gained 44.9% total return in 2020 and has gained 98.1% total return over the last 2 years. Its best two-year run since 1998 to 1999. The NASDAQ composite is an unmanaged index of securities traded on the NASDAQ system. Those three stats come from BTN Research. I found this one particularly interesting. The lowest and highest unemployment rates in the United States in the last 50 years since 1970 both occurred in 2020, and they took place just 2 months apart. The lowest was 3.5%, and the highest was 14.7%. Let's talk about life expectancy. That's something we bring up on the show quite a bit. The life expectancy at birth of an American baby in 1971, or 50 years ago, was 71.1 years. The life expectancy at birth of an American baby today is 78.7 years. Thus, the life expectancy in the United States has increased 7.6 years over the last half century. Kind of crazy. That's from the Center for Disease Control. All right, we always got to talk about housing, right? Especially with interest rates this year. The average interest rate nationwide on a 30-year fixed rate mortgage was 2.76% at the end of 2020. The all-time record low national average is 2.66%, set just 1 week earlier on December 24th of 2020. Think about that. That's from Freddie Mac. All right, and oil. The price of oil ended 2020 at $48.52 a barrel, down 20.5% from its 2019 close of $61.06 a barrel. Oil's all-time closing high price is $147.27 a barrel, and that was 7/11 of 08, and that's from the CME Group. All right, well, welcome back, everybody. Have a happy new year. There's your Shea Stats.
All righty. Thank you, Shea Pataja from Prout Financial Design. Mr. Dennis Prout live in the studio with us, and we do have one call before we wrap it up.
Sounds great.
Let's jump over to Kevin from Elk Rapids. Good morning, Kevin.
Yeah, good morning. Just a question regarding buying gold as an inflation measure.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of different ways, obviously, to do it. If you were to buy and physically hold gold, how would you recommend doing it?
Well, if you're going to actually hold the physical gold yourself, generally I'd recommend you buy a U.S. minted gold. So you've got the Buffalo, you've got all kinds of, there are four or five different versions of minted coins that you can buy in gold, all the way down from a tenth of an ounce to a full 1 ounce coin. But because they're U.S. minted dollar, or rather coins, they tend to, they have their own collectability, if you will, but they tend to be somewhat more liquid rather than gold bars, if you will. But either one are valid. It's just that the coinage tends to hold a better value over time. Okay?
And if you didn't physically hold it, you have any other suggestions how you might take advantage of gold?
Well, if you're not going to hold it, you can always buy it through a brokerage account, through ETFs that actually hold the gold themselves. Or if you want, you're okay with more risk, then you can always buy, I would say, conservative mining companies in that industry, because they tend to travel not only in concert with an increasing price in gold, but tend to be exponential in terms of performance. I would say tend to be, but those also are highly risky investments to own. Full disclosure,
sure.
Okay? Yeah. So several different ways to own that metal. It depends on your own wants and needs, okay?
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call today, Kevin.
Appreciate it.
Where does one buy a gold bar or a gold coin?
Well, you can buy it from an individual dealer, or there are many dealers online. Obviously, you want to stay with those who have a long-term history and track record and a good reputation in terms of delivery and price. You can check the prices easy to check where the actual gold bullion price is to see how much more you are paying, whether you are buying or selling that commodity. And keep in mind, too, and I didn't mention this with Kevin, generally you want to hold on to this for a 3 to 5 year period because this asset can be extremely volatile in the short term. Okay.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.